A little later this morning, though, in William Street, in the legal centre of Melbourne, Justice Lex Lasry, in one of his final cases before he retires, will hand down a sentence in a case that I'm sure many of you are familiar with. And if you're not already, well, you need to be now. Patrick Cronin was an aspiring physiotherapist and accomplished local footballer until he found himself caught up in a bit of a fight. He was coward punched in April 2016, and the man who did that to him is up for sentencing today. It's been a long and arduous process for, in fact, his parents. Matt and Robin Cronin have joined me in the studio this morning, but for a very specific reason. We're not here to tell the judge what to do. We're not here to try to influence the legal system. We're here to see what we can learn from the nightmare that descended on this family in April 2016. Matt, Robin, good morning to you.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, John.
And thank you for coming in on what must be a most stressful day for you. I've prefaced our chat by saying what we're not doing, and I'm sure anybody listening will understand why we have to respect the process that's about to have its apex.
Yep.
In William Street later this morning. And on that basis, we've agreed to have a chat. And thank you for accepting the restrictions that the law necessitates that we have. It's been an extraordinary time, and you've established a foundation.
Yes.
In your son's memory as well. So we'll talk about that too. Robin, first of all, take us through the emotional ordeal and the process as you outlined in your victim impact statement to the court.
Well, where do you start? You know, from a perfectly healthy, happy boy going out one Saturday night just to catch up with his mates, to getting a phone call at 1 o'clock asking me to come and get him and thinking he'd maybe had a few too many drinks and that's why I was going to get him.
Many parents have been there and done that.
Exactly. What unfolded... As much as we've lived without Pat for nearly 19 months now, it still just doesn't feel real in so many ways that he's gone. It's brokenness. It's created so many mixed feelings, you know. And the process of getting to court has continued to strike us again and again and again in so many subtle and different ways. And yeah, I just really still can't fathom or believe how we got here and how this happened.
It's meant that you've seen the legal system up close, far closer than most of us want to.
Yes.
What do you think? It's taken, as you've already said, it's taken more than 18 months, now 19 months to get to this point.
Yeah, certainly how long it's taken seems a bit hard to believe. From what we understood at the beginning to be a fairly concise sort of case, there was CCTV. We've been staggered by all the delays, by the different things that have happened, by so many things. You know, my having made a statement meant that I was potentially going to testify and have been not allowed to attend some of the things.
Not allowed to watch everything.
Not allowed to watch everything.
In case your testimony is tainted.
That's correct, yeah. And then in the end, on the morning of the week of the trial, being told that, no, actually I wouldn't be able to testify.
A murder charge was downgraded to manslaughter. Eventually a plea deal was done in exchange for various concessions, a plea of guilty.
Yep.
Was entered in relation to the manslaughter charge, as long as it wasn't called a coward punch case.
That's right. Yeah, the coward punch, let's call it the coward punch notice. You know, it's probably not the technical term, but that's the notice that was withdrawn in order to secure a guilty plea on the third day of the trial.
Do you understand the reasoning why?
Yeah, I do.
The barristers have explained all of that to you.
Yeah, we do. And in effect, the sentencing legislation is ineffective. Pat's...
Sorry, what part of it?
Well, there's four criteria. So the way it was explained to us when murder was dropped down to manslaughter, it was because they couldn't prove intent.
Yep.
And then now we're told...
Well, couldn't prove intent to kill.
So the definition of murder, and this is one that I don't think has been widely publicised or known, is that the definition of murder in Victoria is the intention to kill or the intention to inflict really serious injury that results in death.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because it's one punch, they said that we can't prove intent.
No.
It needs to be a sustained attack.
Well, proving what's in the mind of somebody...
Correct.
It's a very difficult thing.
Correct, and especially when that person hasn't made a statement.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which is their right.
Correct, they have the right to remain silent.
So the coward punch laws specifically brought in for cases like this couldn't be applied.
Yeah, correct. So again, downgraded from murder to manslaughter because of intent, then we get to a point where manslaughter says, just did Pat get punched? Okay, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. Did he get punched?
And that resulted in his death.
And that resulted in his death. And had it gone to a jury, well, the jury had to make that call. In the end, the offender pleaded guilty. We don't know why, but he did after all that time. So, but then what happens is it gets passed over to the judge, and the judge has to then sentence according to the notice. And the notice says there's four criteria, and again, I'm probably not being technical. I'm not a lawyer. I'm a financial planner. But in terms of the four criteria, did he get punched to the head? Yes. Did he get punched from behind? Yes. Would the killer have known that he wasn't expecting to be hit? Well, you punch someone from behind. I think that's fair to say. And the fourth point, which is the sticking point, is did he intend to hit Pat? So all of a sudden, we now go back to intention again. And in this case, we've taken intention off the table when the murder charge was dropped. And yet the judge's standard in proving beyond reasonable doubt and sentencing beyond reasonable doubt, there's now an intention clause brought back in.
So the legal system's trying to strike a balance between the rights of someone accused of a crime and the interests of the family of the... In this case, the deceased, your son.
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, look, it goes back and, you know, sadly there's too many deaths that have happened this way, same as Pat. You know, David Kassai, you know, his mother, Katerina, was the one who lobbied very, very strongly for this change in law. But it seems to us that the, you know, this was brought in 2014 and yet those provisions have still not yet been used. Only 3 weeks ago, in another case with Jaden Walker, the notice was withdrawn as well. Now, in that case, it was because Jaden was hit from the front and not from behind.
Which is one of the requirements. So have the coward punch rules actually worked at all, do you think?
Not at all.
Have they been used against any person yet in the courts?
Not against anyone.
So what do you think needs to happen to the laws specifically brought in for cases... Pretty much your son's death would be a template for where they're supposed to be used.
That's what we would have thought. So I think what needs to happen is that the lawmakers need to go back to the drawing board.
And say, okay, well, we brought this in with good intent.
Yes.
There's been enough instances where it could have and should have applied.
Yep.
And it hasn't. So maybe we need to fine-tune these new laws because they're not working the way we originally thought they could.
Correct. And I think particularly when you go from murder to manslaughter... on the grounds of intent, that is intent's taken off the table. So to prove manslaughter, there's no intent required. It's just did you punch?
The actual events themselves.
Correct. And therefore, really what needs to happen is that, you know, if we need to have minimum sentencing, and my view on that is, and our view on that is that we don't need minimum sentencing. We just need sentencing in line with community expectations.
And trust the judges to
make the right decision.
Get the right range, depending on all the complexity of the circumstances.
Correct.
Robin, do you feel that as people with the greatest interest in this case, do you feel you've been included in the decision-making and adequately consulted?
Certainly not in the decision-making. We have been... told all along, the important things we've been told, that when this was being considered to be taken off the table, the coward punch sentencing part, we were told about it, but we didn't have the final decision.
No.
We were allowed to express our opinion.
But before the decision was taken?
Yes.
Before the decision.
You were consulted, but you weren't given a veto.
No.
We didn't have a vote. Let's put it that way. Yeah. I mean, it was the, as even the, you know, the barrister said to us, it's the Director of Public Prosecutions who makes the decision.
Yeah. Do you think that's right?
I think our opinion needs to be taken into account, but someone asked me the question the other day, if we had the right of appeal on this, would we appeal?
If you personally had a right to appeal against a decision taken by the prosecutors.
Correct, yeah.
To do a plea bargain.
Correct, yeah. Right? And if we were asked that question, and we have been asked that question, the answer is actually no. And the reason why it's no is because it's not about the appeal, it's about the law. The law's wrong. Right, the provisions in the law that says you have to can you prove intent that he intended to punch Pat, because that law won't change. Right, so until that law changes, there is no the plea bargain, if you like, that happened. It really was never going to be used by the judge anyway.
Yeah. And I guess you can't, on the one hand, say you want it done expeditiously and you don't want it dragged out, but then at the same time say, but if there are decisions we don't like, we want the prospect of appealing them, because that will obviously delay things even more.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there is a point, and I know this is awkward, and I'm not wanting in any way to upset you, but sometimes the families and the bereaved are not the best people to make decisions about how something should proceed, because their judgment is clouded, of course, by their grief.
Yeah.
And the legal system takes that into account, and that's why there's independent people to administer the process. Otherwise, we're back to medieval times. Where bereaved people seek out revenge, or in Indigenous communities you get tribal punishments, the equivalent. Yeah. That's why it's done independently, is it not?
Yeah, I think we understand that. I mean, the hard bit is to remove the emotion from it.
Of course.
You know, absolutely. You know, we've had countless meetings with the staff at the Office of Public Prosecution. Most of them have ended in tears.
Yours and theirs?
More so ours, I'd say. But, you know, look,
they're not robotic either.
No, correct. And you know, I think the thing that we feel, though, and it's probably more about a case of advocacy, is that we feel as victims, and let's not forget here, there's really only one victim, and that's Pat. Pat hasn't had a voice since the 16th of April, so we're his voice.
You are.
And, you know, so in standing up for our son, we just feel that the way that the system works is that we don't really have anyone in our corner. Not fighting for the Cronin family, they're fighting for the law.
So the prosecutors, even though they consult you, even though they explain to you, you don't feel they're your champions?
They're not our champions.
They're there for the community and the police.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, even as simple as the subpoena that Robin was delivered to appear in court when it first came out, the subpoena says the DPP versus the killer. Right? It's not the Cronin family versus the killer. It's the DPP, or the state of Victoria, and he's representing the state of Victoria, because it's a law that's been broken.
Matt and Robin, pop the headphones on for me for just a second, because Katerina has called in, David Kassai's mum. Katerina, good morning to you.
Good morning, everyone. Hi, Matt and Robin. I'm with you today. I know what you're going to be going through. With the coward punch law, when we campaigned for a 10-year minimum. We've initially campaigned for manslaughter to be 10-year minimum, which would have covered everything. But then, great, the Liberal government introduced the coward punch law. But soon after it was introduced, I realised it wasn't going to be effective. And earlier last year, I even wrote to the Attorney General's office, spoke to his senior advisor to say, it's not going to work. And her response was, well, no one's been charged with it yet, so we won't know if it doesn't work.
Well, do we know now, Katerina?
It doesn't work. Mm. I'm not legally trained.
No,
and
but
if I was able to understand it, you know, why wouldn't they even review it at the time to think that this is continuing, families are suffering, and to be dealt all these highs and lows in the court, it just adds salt to the wounds. And when something can be fixed and be proactive in fixing and changing it, why don't the people in charge and, you know, who are able to make changes, make the changes?
Katerina, what happened to the offender in your son's death?
He was given a minimum of 6 years, a maximum of 9. In David's case, it was a sustained attack. It wasn't just a punch that killed David. It was, you know, hip and shoulder, threw a punch, tackled David to the ground. He punched two of David's friends, then chased David down and threw that punch that killed him. And I, at the time, said it should have been a murder charge because, you know, it was the intent changed after that first punch was thrown, or that hip and shoulder. But no, he was charged with manslaughter and got that that 6-year minimum and 9-year maximum. It's never enough, but at least a 10-year minimum would start to get people to realise that, you know, you're going to go to jail for a lot longer than 5 or 6 years, and a life is worth more than that. And how much more dead do you have to be, you know?
Well, and indeed, when we talk about sentencing, we talk about punishment and deterrence.
That's right.
And there are supposed to be both taken into account. And if indeed, I suspect I'm hearing from you, Katerina, that you think the 6-year minimum is not enough of a deterrent in this case, then we have to ask.
In no case. It's in no case. You know, Patrick's life is, who knows what, you know, the court's going to do today. But David's case and others before him, you know, their life is worth, you know, more than 5 or 6 years. And that's what spurred me on to come out and call for at least a 10-year minimum. If it's not murder, at least manslaughter of a 10-year minimum at least. So it would, you know, deter. I think the first part of justice is to punish and to deter. Yes, rehabilitate, that comes into play. I'm not saying don't rehabilitate, but they need to be punished and the community needs to be deterred. And it needs to be denunciated, and I don't feel, and I'm sure the Cronins will think this, that none of that's happening at the moment. And there's many thousands before us that have gone through the courts that walk away totally gutted, a system that keeps failing victims, and we've got no say in it.
Katerina, we will see what Justice Lasry does later this morning. Thank you indeed for contributing to our understanding of the context of all of this. And, of course, I wish you all the very, very best as well. Matt, Robin, you're heading from here back up to William Street for the hopefully final time. And I hope you never have to visit the halls of the cold and inhospitable halls of the Supreme Court ever again, or any other court for that matter. But there's also another aspect to all of this that we've really not yet touched on, which is that, and it's that wonderful thing we talked about with Sam Johnson the other day as Victoria's nominee for Australian of the Year. Something good can come from something bad, and you've decided to adopt that mindset as well. So, yep. Robin and Matt, what have you decided to do?
Well, we've established the Pat Cronin Foundation. The seeds of that came the day that we got home, or the morning after we got home from hospital saying goodbye to Pat. We just felt that we needed to do something. We can't let this pass without, I don't know, we've always been strong community people and we just wanted to make a difference.
Yeah. And Pat's life's just too important to let it just slip away like that. So, yeah, we started the foundation. We want to stop this sort of thing happening as much as we can.
The random senseless violence.
Yes, the random senseless violence. And if we can prevent one family having to go through what we've gone through, well, then that's a good thing. And we plan to do this through the foundation by awareness, education and research. That the form that's going to take is still to play out. We're looking at joining up with La Trobe University to fund some research into the sort of behaviour that creates these situations and what can be done about that, and putting that into education packages that we want to take out to communities to speak to groups of young people and tell them about Pat's story and perhaps help them develop ways to avoid these sorts of things and show them the consequences.
And ironically, there's a debate at the moment in government circles over liquor licensing and putting more licensed venues into areas where it's already known. There's a disproportionate number of incidents of drinking-related violence, and it's impossible, is it not, to have the one conversation without the other?
I think you have to. You know, the conversation has to be there. It's multifaceted what we have to do. It's not one answer. We probably think, you know, realistically, you know, as I said, our stated intention with the foundation is to end the coward punch. That's how Pat died. That's our story.
And if nothing else, one thing is to get that particular part of the law better tuned so it actually works. And then the other aspect too is, as you say, it'll work out the background and the context within which these incidents keep happening. So, look, if people want to contribute, there's a number of fundraisers you've got just before we wind up.
Yep, sure. On Sunday the 19th of November, we have our first official event as a foundation, which is called the Pat Cronin Foundation Walk to the Valley. It's a community walk of about just over 8 kilometres from Heidelberg Cricket Ground to the Lower Plenty Footy Ground where Pat played his footy.
Right through that fantastic Banyule Parkland area.
Correct, yeah, along the Yarra Trail and Plenty River Trails. You can find out all the details on our Facebook page, which, you know, if you just search Pat Cronin Foundation under events, click on the links and, you know, we'd love to. Last year we had the walk. We did it sort of a little bit without any fanfare because of the legal process. This year it's our event. Last year we had 1,000 people walk. We'd love to have 2,000 this year.
So, 1,000 people with no
publicity.
Preparation, no marketing or any plan or any intent. Just spontaneously people turned up.
Correct, yeah. Just word of mouth and, you know, the power of our Facebook community, I guess, got people there.
Pat Cronin Foundation, all one word, patcroninfoundation.org.au.
Yep.
On the website, there's also a Facebook page, as there always is for these things. Look, big hug to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for giving us the opportunity to come in.
It's my absolute pleasure. Yep. And, we'll see what happens in court later this morning.
Thank you.
We'll be thinking of you.
Thanks, John.
Matt and Robin Cronin, parents of Patrick. patcroninfoundation.org.au. And they're off now to William Street to see what happens at this, well, very awkward part, very emotional part of a long and drawn-out legal process.